Rob. Thank you very much for joining me today on the Snow Magazine podcast. Our guest, Rob English, frequent contributor to the magazine and frequent content contributor to the website In Between Issues. He's been on the podcast before. He's a great resource for what's going on with regard to availability and prices around rock salt and other de-icing materials. Rob, thank you for joining us today and kind of giving us a little bit of a midsummer state of salt report as guys begin to get their orders in for their winter needs. I think there's a lot of questions out there with regard to how other outside factors are going to impact pricing and availability.
Well, hello, Mike, and hello, listeners. It is, as is always the case in commodity materials, it's an ever-changing landscape from a variety of pressures and conditions. Some of them you can see coming. Some you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things right now that I think everybody, and it's ever present in front of everyone, is fuel. And I talked about it in the State of the Salt that's in the will be in an upcoming issue or current issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a loader working a storm, a normal good sized loader can burn 12 gallons of fuel an hour. Well, that fuel is now, in the range of $75 an hour, just the fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And so you take that across the breadth of the industry, from digging salt from the ground and collecting it and loading it and moving it. And now you realize logistics are far and away the biggest cost with road salt and low price commodity chemicals. So it has a huge impact. I have no idea, nor does anyone, where fuel prices really will go. I don't see them coming off.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we were to have some political disruption in the Middle East, they could skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's certainly a fragile world with regards to fuel. I'm not seeing a lot of electric sanders out there on the highway just yet.
not yet.
I don't think we're getting out of the fuel thing anytime soon. So, mm-hmm. Fuel is a big, big deal. We also, some will remember that January 1st, 2020 was overshadowed by the pandemic. But January 1st, 2020, IMO, International Maritime Organization 2020 rules went into effect, which meant all ships had to burn ultra low sulfur fuels. And there wasn't a lot of it around there. So some ships found they could run at a considerably lower speed and still meet the air pollution maximum standards.
Mm-hmm.
And others that put scrubbers in. So that kind of, that put a ding into international shipping. Then the pandemic. Then fuels go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Then some ships parked. Things were not moving. And so there's an imbalance on a broad scale in ocean shipping. No mm-hmm. question about it. And mm-hmm. They still haven't gotten that back. And it's hard to say where it'll be.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, before the pandemic, before a lot of the supply chain issues, a lot of guys in our industry were looking at foreign salt as a cost-cutting measure. But now with bringing it overseas being, more challenging, does that place more stress on, North American mines to fill in that tonnage?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I mean, the reality is we are a global economy.
Mm-hmm.
Low price commodities like salt will always reach places by water easily and generally speaking, affordably. So whether you're digging out of a mine in Hutchinson, Kansas, or in Rochester, New York, and rail or trucking it to a stockpile, or whether you're dropping it in a ship in some location in the Brazil, Caribbean, Europe, North Africa,
mm-hmm.
any place where a vessel can get alongside a dock and unload will always be a candidate for salt from overseas. And so, and overseas markets have been dinged with the reduction of demand in the pandemic. And so they're looking to get back in the game, and we've got a lot of people. But I think if you know what you're doing, you may be able to go out and procure salt by the vessel. If you don't know what you're doing, it's a, what's the old joke, where you want to make $1 million in salt, well, start with 5 million and you'll have $1 million after your first season. So, you know, it's not for the faint of heart of the uninitiated, that's for sure. And things can always look a lot rosier until you get into it and realize all the pieces and components.
Yeah, that go into it. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you had mentioned to me, Michael, that you saw a an article about Buy American in New York State.
Right.
Which I did read through some of that. It's not clear to me exactly, but it's classic political. The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
So they go and they say, okay, we want to buy American, we want American steel and American concrete on our roadways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's spilled into salt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, now if you look at New York and specifically, we'll say North Jersey, somewhere close to half of all of the imported salt in the United States is on docks there.
Mm-hmm.
Serving that region. So if suddenly you say, well, you can't use any of that salt because it's not from the United States, you know, that's going to really change things. And so in the case of New York, this was up in Ogdensburg, where they end up furloughing International Longshoremen Association dock workers because the salt can't come down from Canada.
Right.
So we really do need to always be open. And while the spirit of the regulation is good in that, you know, we really want to try to revitalize American manufacturing and infrastructure with American parts, it's not always economically the best option. So it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's interesting for sure.
Yep. Let me ask you, I know on the commercial side, commercial contractors are always very interested to know what the municipalities and the DOTs are starting to pay per ton for their rock salt. Have you heard any word on how the munis and government institutions, if they're paying more or less this year, and what could that possibly mean for the price commercial contractors? Are they going to be a little happier, or are they going to be a little sticker shock this year?
I don't think there'll be sticker shock, but I think the manufacturers and producers and distributors of salt that serve municipal markets are going to be a little more careful about their commitments, and they don't want to get in a condition where they're overbooked or they've not been competitive. So, you know, the bid business is not complicated. It starts out in the spring and they'll start flying numbers to see what the market might take and what your competitors might support. And then somewhere between now and, we'll say, September, it'll all settle in. So to answer the question, because I've kind of danced around it a little bit, salt's up. There's just no two ways about it. The price is up. You know, it's up in the range of 10%, which given fuel sounds like nothing. What you're going to see this year that you've not seen in the past, I think two things. You'll see more demand to adhere to a contracted amount. If you say I'm going to take 1,000 tons and I'll need 500 by 12/31 and 500 after 12/31, there'll be a penalty for not achieving the goals that you established you would take. And from the supply side, you can't blame them. They're not going to sit on a few million tons of salt and have someone say, yeah, we'll take it. Nah, we don't need it. We really don't need it. Thank you. So they're going to be less likely to be understanding of your problems and more demanding that you're understanding of their problems. So Prices are up. I think you're going to see fuel surcharges. I think you'll see a separate line item fuel surcharge. Mm-hmm. Certainly in private, you'll see that.
Mm-hmm.
Municipals often will not accept a fuel surcharge. So they're still trying to figure out where that's going to land with municipal pricing.
Mm-hmm.
But 10-15% up is pretty solid, and it really could go more than that. If they can't find a way to get a fuel surcharge or recover the actual increase in fuel costs.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that probably means that commercial contractors are going to get saddled with that fuel surcharge.
Well, I think commercial contractors will definitely be saddled with a surcharge, and the commercial contractors are going to turn around to their clients and do the same thing. We go back to that. Right. $72 an hour for every loader in the lot. You've got to recover that money. So mm-hmm. they're also, and there are countless indices for fuel surcharges that track so that there's fairness involved. And you can, there are government indices where you can just say, okay, we're going to start here. And each one of these clicks above is this much percentage on our fee, whatever it might be.
Right.
But I think there's no choice but to come back with fuel surcharges. If you don't do it, I think there's a good chance that you won't be around the following year because you just get clobbered.
Yeah. Let me take you back a little bit right before the pandemic went full tilt. You know, I know you had written a lot about issues pertaining to the transportation of materials up and down the Mississippi and through the riverways, and that there were a lot of lock work projects going on that were, in a sense, you know, delaying. It was bottlenecking some of the transportation, including salt. And do you have any update on, have you been tracking how those projects have gone? Are they complete? Are you beginning to see kind of clear sailing, so to speak, pardon the pun, of transportation of goods up and down the Mississippi?
Well, I mean, the Mississippi and then all of the branches that go off of it. So, you know, there's an extensive river system in the United States. It is vital to commodities. It's commodities going out in the form of grain. It's commodities coming in the form of everything. So for the most part, a lot of the work that was up on the Ohio end and some of those fingers that come off the Mississippi, I think that's all completed now. The river system will always be subject to high and low water challenges. And your listeners will all be aware of the damage at Yellowstone mm-hmm. from a sudden melt and rain. And so those kinds of events get into a river system, and the next thing you know, the barge can't get under the bridge, and you've mm-hmm. got to wait for the water to subside. Or mm-hmm. conversely, it's a drought year, and the barge can't go anywhere because it's not enough water to get them up the river. So problems in the rivers always exist. But for the most part, I think we do a pretty good job as a nation at keeping that vital transportation pathway open and running to the best of our ability.
Mm-hmm. You know, one last thing I wanted to touch base with you on today. You know, there's been a lot being talked about with regard to some states are looking at the road salt use under the microscope and its potential impact on waterways and flora and fauna. And I know Josh Ferguson, one of his colleagues, was on the podcast with me recently talking about, you know, things to think about with regard to, you know, the potential liability with that. And of course, you know, it is very complicated topic. It involves, you know, obviously municipal and governments who are using, you know, rock salt, and then there's the commercial side. You know, as this issue begins to heat up and more public discussion is being placed on this issue, what, you know, from your end of the industry, what are your thoughts on it right now? And have you had any discussions with, you know, colleagues at other, you know, salt companies about, you know, what this could mean? And are you vulnerable to liability on that if they want to start, you know, regulating it in some capacity?
Well, we live in a litigious society. Everybody is vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So there's no escaping it. You can be sued for anything. And, you know, just as you hear the term cancel culture, we're also quick as a blame culture to say, well, you know, I didn't cause that problem. And so we're very concerned. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you've heard, and listeners will have read a lot about sensible salting and all kinds of educational programs to keep it just to what you need.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're the contractor and your job is to de-ice that sidewalk, and if somebody takes a fall on that sidewalk that you were responsible for, you know, the average slip and fall lawsuit, the average is $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them don't even get, you know, they get filed and they don't finish. So some of them are a good bit more. So it's of concern. And so from the guy throwing the material down, if a little does a good job, a lot will do a better job. And so this is how we kind of end up in this condition where we're over-treating. So the numbers are a little murky. Nobody really wants to say. We're running somewhere between 20 and 20 million tons of salt in the United States every year for road de-icing. Those are big numbers.
Yeah.
Those are very big numbers. And so salt is a mine product. I have been talking about this, have had concern about this for a decade, that as a mine product, this is not a highly refined material where we get only sodium chloride. We get whatever materials come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true of any form of mining. You get contaminants. Some of those contaminants are problematic. Some of them are nothing. It could be, you know, a mineral that has no problem. The variety of contamination issues with salt are pretty broad. There's concern about chloride in freshwater. We're definitely raising chloride levels in freshwater systems to a problem, you know, level.
Mm-hmm.
You can in certain areas using road salt where someone has a private well, they can start picking up sodium in the well. And if you're hypertensive, you know, they don't want you to consume water that has more than 20 parts per million of sodium in mm-hmm. it. So as a municipal water system, if they exceed that number, they have to notify all their users. And people tend to overreact to the notification. It really is targeted only for people with hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
But it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen levels that had severe contamination to where people were destined to run only bottled water. They mm-hmm. had no other choice. To clean that up in a private well is very expensive. Reverse osmosis membrane, both are very expensive and low yield.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're lucky, you might produce 10 gallons of drinking water a day in a contaminated well that's contaminated with salt to remove the salt by mm-hmm. RO or membrane. So that's a challenge. And so we really have to accept that the near 80% reduction in serious highway accidents and traffic accidents that salt delivers, the counterbalance to that is the adverse side effects of using the material. So contamination in the salt is something that I've paid a lot more attention to in recent years. We've seen liquids, for example, the fracking brines and oil mm-hmm. spill brines, they'll come up. They can have radium, uranium. They can have unwanted materials in them.
Mm-hmm.
The industry that's applying them says they're harmless. Those levels are meaningless. But to the person who's sitting there with children in the yard and sees the spray truck go by and has that information, they're going to be understandably concerned. You know, what is this going to do to my family? What is this going to do to my well?
Yeah.
So there's more and more attention. I think if you go back to the podcast with Josh Ferguson and Alec Tyra, the attorneys, I think everyone that's listening to this should definitely have a conversation with their attorney about contracts and what they are on the hook for with their client base, because they may buy a product in good faith and find out that they've polluted someone's property and they're on the hook. And you want to make sure that you have an effective, enforceable, hold harmless, and get out of jail free card. If the client says use this material on this property at this rate and you do that, and whether the rate is not enough to effectively de-ice and people are falling and sliding all over the place, or whether it's causing contaminant pollution, you shouldn't be the one held responsible for that when you did what was asked of you.
Right. Absolutely.
But yeah, everyone really needs to get the magnifying glass out on their contract and their exposure, and understand. I think it's crazy to buy salt from any source and not demand a statement from the provider as to what's in the product. Mm-hmm. Give me a chemical breakdown of what I'm buying here. Federal and most state right to know laws require that you are entitled to that information, and you should know. So it's, you just want to be careful. Again, back to the first statement, it's a litigious world.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're all looking to take a bite out of somebody's wallet.